We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media, WILL, this is Focus. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn. The producer for the program is Harriet Williamson. Our technical director today is Jason Croft. This morning, we open the phone lines and the email message folder for questions about diet and nutrition and well-being. Our guest is licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move. Listeners, I look forward to your questions and comments this morning. Join us with a telephone call or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL, W-I-L-L. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move. She's an adjunct lecturer with the University of Illinois Food Science and Human Nutrition Department. She's the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. She's also the sports dietitian for Illini Athletics, and she leads nutrition and cooking classes at the Activities and Recreation Center on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Questions about diet, nutrition, health, and wellness are invited this morning. Again, the phone number is 333-9455, 800-222-9455. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Good morning. Good to see
you. We had a little hiatus last month.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
So it's nice good to be back.
Good to see you again. And here we are. It's September. Kids are back in school. And today it really feels like September.
It really does. It was a nice, cool morning.
Yeah. So as it is September and the kids are back in school, you suggested, why don't we talk about lunch boxes and lunch at school for kids. And that's a great topic. And I suspect that more of us, children and adults, are bringing their lunch with them for the day.
Right.
So let's ask our listeners a couple of questions.
Okay.
What's their experience putting those lunches together? And here's another fun question, I think. What do you remember about lunch when you were a kid? So one of the things I wonder about is, you know, is variety the spice of life, or do we like the same thing day in and day out? So anyway, again, if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, what does a healthy lunch look like for the littlest schoolgoers?
Well, I think, you know, obviously there's two options. Most kids get the opportunity to eat at school, which does work well for a lot of families and works well for a lot of kids. And especially if your kids aren't too picky, that, you know, that works well because there are a lot of different things that kids may not normally be used to eating, although the school lunches are pretty basic now. They're not quite as varied, I think, as when I was a kid, where we did have a lot more things on the outskirts, maybe. But so kids may be certainly eating at school, but if you have a child who maybe doesn't want to do that or you want to have them take their lunch, it does seem when I'm eating at school periodically, a lot more kids are bringing their own lunches. Definitely, I think that I've definitely witnessed that. And the biggest thing you want to think about, well, two things really. I think you almost have to take a step back to breakfast because what we want to make sure is that kids get some good energy in right away in the morning, that they can have some, you know, have enough food in their system so that their lunch doesn't have to be too big. Because part of the problem, of course, with most schools is that there's not that much time to eat. And so when you're planning lunch, particularly for young kids, it's important to remember to really not give them too much because they don't have sometimes more than 10, 15, 20 minutes max a lot of places. And that they do need some of that energy early in the day too. So I would even start with breakfast and say, you know, a couple things I would make sure of with your kids at breakfast. Make sure they're getting enough protein in the morning, which not that you necessarily have to count, but I would say for most young kids, getting 10 to 20 grams of protein is helpful, which means they might get something like toast with peanut butter or a slice of cheese on it or something like that, and also a glass of milk or soy milk, so that there's two proteins, maybe the cheese and the milk, or maybe peanut butter and milk, mm-hmm. or a couple scrambled eggs and yogurt or something like that, because the proteins are really helpful in the morning to help kids concentrate. They last a little bit longer than just a bagel or just a carbohydrate source. And so that helps lead up to lunch. So I think that's something we need to say, just, you know, try to get two proteins in the morning with what you're giving your child. And then I think the biggest thing for lunch is to make it as fun as you can and make it easy to eat for a kid. A lot of finger foods are helpful because that is a little faster for kids to eat. And certainly then really just trying to get the balance in. So trying to just think, am I getting at least three food groups, preferably four food groups represented? And even if you send something, remember that even if your child eats a little bit of carrots or a little bit of a fruit, for example, in my daughter's lunch this morning, she has cherries, but I just put maybe five or six cherries as a serving in there. That I know that she'll eat probably six cherries, but if I put many more than that, half of them come home. And so that might be a serving, and maybe even six baby carrots as a serving, if you know, because that takes a little longer to eat and to chew. And so you almost have to think about things like how fast can a child eat it, and knowing that even if they get a little fruit and a little vegetable, that's a huge bonus. That's what I always tell my daughter. Even eating a small little cup of your hand of vegetables or fruits is really good for you. So sometimes it's less daunting if they don't have too much to eat. And then we can be sure that if they're getting a little bit of fruit and a little bit of vegetable, some protein, that might be just something simple like rolled up turkey or rolled up ham or something that's easy again to eat, or cheese sticks or yogurt or something like that. And then some type of grain. And a real easy thing for kids is either whole grain bread or small whole grain tortilla, or now the little mini bagels that are really the right size for kids and for lunches, or even some whole grain crackers, things like that. Yeah. So you're balancing it out.
And I've been seeing mini pitas.
The mini pitas, right. Or all the thin buns and things like that really work well for school lunches because they're just not as much volume for the kids to eat. And that's one thing that I think sometimes when I look at lunches, kids have just way more than they need to eat. And the other thing to remember is that from a cost standpoint, it's really helpful if you can make your own mini bags of things. Because, of course, we can buy all the things, the 100-calorie packs and then mini bags of crackers and those kinds of things. But they're probably three or four times the cost as if you put them together in a little bit of a container yourself. And so spending that time and doing it the night before, it's just like I tell my clients I work with who are adults, we really need to put our lunch together the night before. So all we have to do is grab it in the morning, and then you can be assured, you know, your child gets what they need. I mean, one thing my daughter likes is yogurt, but she doesn't like, she'll like maybe the yogurt sticks or the go-gurt type things, but we just freeze them ahead of time. And so put
excellent
them in there.
Idea.
She always has the frozen one go in her lunch in the morning with the little frozen ice container that goes in there. And then by the time she eats it, it's still really cold. And just to remember that you can freeze anything. You can freeze little tortilla wraps. You can freeze sandwiches, all those things that you can freeze and make it easier.
And then by
the
lunchtime, they're
right.
ready to go.
Right.
Does your daughter have a role in making her lunch?
She does sometimes. Normally, I'll make it and the night before, and she might help me. But that's always a great idea, too, to have your kids involved in making it. She may say, as we're putting it together, or especially if we have leftovers, can we have that leftover? She loves to take something hot. So it's really, especially now that it is getting a little bit cooler, to think about saving a little bit of something you had the night before and putting that in a thermos so that they can have something hot the next morning, too. But it's real interesting in her school this year. Last year, she had a teacher who would bring in healthy snacks on Fridays, which was great, and a lot of fruit and things like that. And this year, her teachers, she has two teachers in her classroom, and they really encourage them to bring in a healthy snack, which is so great. And so they get extra points if they have two servings in their two different food groups represented in their snack as opposed to one, which is really super. So I think a lot of schools, the teachers are really reinforcing how important it is to balance your diet and maybe eat more than one food group at a time and those kinds of things. And so she's gotten more excited about, now she's hearing it from the teachers as opposed to just her mom, and that really makes a big difference.
Yeah. And does she help with the shopping?
She does help with the shopping, and she likes to cook too. So I think we do know that it's so important for kids to be in the kitchen and to be around food and to help with shopping lists and to help with shopping. And like some of George's friends, she, you know, really enjoys being at the grocery store. And we've set up a situation that if she cuts out coupons and she takes care of the coupons at the store, then she'll get half that money back. That's part of her pay for helping. And so that's a neat way to get kids involved, because it's going to save you if they've got coupons that they're bringing or for things that you're going to get. And so she sees it kind of as a way for her to help, but also she can get a little money back. So that's good.
That's very good. This is Focus. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn. Susan Kundrat is with us this morning. She's with Nutrition on the Move. She's a registered dietitian, and she joins us once a month to talk about diet and nutrition. I invite you to join us this morning with questions, comments. Join us with a phone call or by email, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Our toll-free number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. We're talking this morning at the beginning of the program here about the lunchbox, but any kind of question you have about diet, nutrition, well-being, they are invited. And again, maybe I didn't give the email address here at this point, but I'll give it right now, will-talk@illinois.edu. So, is having a cool lunchbox still part of the scene for your daughter?
Well, it's part of the scene for her and her friends, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if it is for everybody, but
one
that
of these
was
days
big...
she's going to be growing out of that, maybe. But
I know. But that is, you know, it's funny, but with kids, those little things, I think, are important. And, you know, having a lunchbox you like, I think it's just so, you know, really important for kids if they're bringing their lunch, of course, to make sure they have an insulated lunchbox, make sure they have a good lunchbox that's going to stay somewhat cool, and then have something that they like, for sure. I think another thing with kids, I think as adults we don't think of these things very much, but for kids, even fun little things like maybe one day the lunch is all the same color. You know, maybe it's mostly green, or one day you do a sandwich, but you just get a cookie cutter out and you cut out little triangles for the sandwich or flowers for the sandwiches, little mini sandwiches or something like that. And we just know from studies that kids tend to eat things that are more fun to them. And I think that's something that takes a little time again, but if you have kind of a setup, that's really helpful. I have a friend who puts together all kind of bean salads, and her kids always take these great bean salads to lunch, and the other kids always want them because they look so colorful, and her kids are very proud to be eating those bean salads, which, of course, are so healthy. And it's a great thing to take. Or a pasta salad is really great for your kids, because if they have a big pasta salad with veggies in it, maybe some cheese or beans or something, they've got that. And then maybe a fruit, and that might be enough for lunch. But that's real easy, and that's something that, you know, they can cover all the bases and is colorful. So kids tend to eat things if they're more colorful or fun.
Let's take a call now. This is a listener in Urbana on line one. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering if you could give some food guidelines, some safety guidelines in terms of mayonnaise and eggs, in terms of taking hard-boiled eggs. How long can you keep them safely in your lunch? Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, that's a good question. Generally, hard-boiled eggs are fine. They're better if they're actually, if you keep the shell on them. So sometimes people like to take the shell off and then put it in there, but I think they keep a little bit better if you have the shell on there. And I still, though, for a hard-boiled egg or for most foods, yogurt, things like that, I would just make sure that in that lunch bag you have a freezer pack in there. And anything that goes in generally goes in cold. We know that an egg can sit out and you can eat it if it's hard-boiled. But, you know, the next day it's probably fine. But that way you'd make sure that it is still have a cold pack in there. And the one thing I would you know, encourage people to do with mayonnaise and other sauces and things like that. Generally, again, if it stays cool and it's got mayonnaise in it, it's still cool when they eat it. It's generally fine. You know, that's not necessarily going to be a problem. But the other thing you can do that's a little bit safer is just pick up some of the extra single serving mayonnaise packs or things that don't need to be refrigerated. And those are another option so that the mayonnaise wasn't open and then they could open it. Some of the problem with those little packages is kids can't open them,
right?
But so that becomes a little harder, but I wouldn't worry about about mayonnaise or sauces or eggs or things like that, as long, again, as there's a cold pack in there and it's been cold to begin with. That's one of the benefits of actually making the lunch ahead of time and having it refrigerated overnight, and it's cold, and then you put a cold pack in it, it's much more apt to stay cool as opposed to just making it that morning.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily cold to begin with.
Yeah, I have one of those freezer packs, and at the end of the day when I go home, it's still, the lunchbox is still cold.
Yeah.
But it's an insulated lunchbox, That's something else to keep in mind. Let's take another call. Listener online, 2 in Champaign. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I was hearing about making interesting bean salads. And another thing that I think piques the interest of the young folks is ethnic stuff, you know, and I wanted to ask about quinoa and using quinoa for, bean quinoa salad, stuff like that. It's such a great grain. It's so nutritious. It's interesting because your buddies go, what in the dickens are you eating, you know? And you
right.
Go, well, I'm eating quinoa. And where's that from? You can tell a whole long story about where it's from and its nutritional value.
No,
the other comment I wanted to make is, having had kids in high school, it's just not cool to eat there in the cafeteria, eat the food your parents send with you. They like to just leave the school, and they head on over to the pizza shop 2 blocks away, or, you know, the burger shop 3 blocks away, or anywhere they can go. But it's just not cool to eat in school and eat what your parents send. That's all I got.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thanks for the call this morning. That's true, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very true. And I think to go back to his first comment, I think, it's a great way to introduce your kids to some new foods is to, introduce them to them at home generally first, something like quinoa, which is kids usually love because that's just a tiny little grain and it's, again, easy to eat and it is very high in protein, very high in B vitamins. Something like that, or brown rice in a salad or something chewy like that would be great. And even if you need to sweeten it a little bit, a lot of the salads you can put together have those grains, and maybe you could put a little bit of dried fruit in it and a little bit of honey, and it kind of sweetens it, but it's also another way to get some fruit in. So there's great ways to use those grains. And I would just encourage people, if they've got any grain left over from the night, then that would be something you could just throw a few vegetables in or something and put that together for salad, even a little Italian dressing or something on there, and that would be really good. The second comment about eating out is very true. As he noted, in high school or so, when kids are able to get a lunch where they can go out and eat. And the main thing I would say there is, again, it's so important to have a good breakfast, even if it's not. I always tell, my students and athletes I work with, it really doesn't have to take more than 5 minutes to have a good breakfast. I mean, you could easily throw yogurt and fruit and juice in the blender and take that with you and drink it on the way to school. So that's a great option of something that's going to have protein and good fruit and things in it. But having a good breakfast helps, because then at lunch you're not, maybe not starving. So even if you are going out, you're not having to eat as much. Mm-hmm. Or it's very simple to maybe even take an apple along, but you're grabbing a piece of pizza and chocolate milk and an apple or something, and that's fine. Or grabbing a couple tacos or something, eating out. So you can certainly eat fast food and add that into what you're having, but it becomes, I think, more of a problem when somebody doesn't eat breakfast. Because if you don't eat breakfast and then you're going fast food, you're going to want to get the extra fries and all the other stuff that really then makes it not such a great lunch, especially to have very often.
What would it take to make taking your lunch to high school and or eating in the cafeteria something that kids would look forward to?
Mm-hmm. Well, some schools, really, it's not looked down upon quite as much. But I think some of that, my experience is, particularly working a lot with athletes, is I find if you get some really good athletes on the team to bring their lunch, pretty soon everybody's doing it, because that's the cool thing to do. And those, those athletes are playing well or performing well, and they're energized, and they have good energy ready for an after-school workout because they know what to bring and they know what to eat at lunch. Then it becomes a little more cool. So I guess my experience would be mostly with high school athletes, working with them, that they end up, hey, this really works for me. So that, is not such a weird thing to do anymore. And also, I think for a lot of people, for kids to understand that if they need that extra time to work on something or do a little bit of homework, that bringing your lunch just saves so much time rather than going out, getting something, coming back. It's the same thing as adults. If we can bring lunch That's great. So many of my clients end up being able then to walk at the noon hour or get a little bit more done so they can leave earlier during the day simply because they don't have to get in their car, go get food. It takes a lot of time to do that at lunch.
Yeah. And the traffic is nuts.
The traffic is nuts. That's right. And sometimes it just takes, you know, a lot longer than you think to actually get your food, much less eat it. So that's where planning a little ahead is really, really helpful. And we also know, just if you look at a general health perspective with lunches, because we also know a lot of kids just don't eat lunch. They either don't bring it or maybe don't have the money for it or aren't able to get a good lunch in. And from a standpoint of overall health, not only being able to do well in school and concentrate well and all those things, but from an obesity standpoint, we certainly know there's enough data to really indicate that eating throughout the day is much better than eating a big meal at night or making sure that you're getting more fuel early in the morning. I recently returned from a training that I went to that was mainly on looking at the research on protein and how that had played out within the last year. And there's a lot of indication that not only breaking down your carbohydrates throughout the day, but making sure your protein is broken down throughout the day really helps energy, body composition, maintaining lower body fat, staying stronger, exercising better, all those things, maintaining better weight. And so there's a big benefit to just really trying to eat a pretty good breakfast and lunch for overall health.
Yeah. It sounds to me like maybe a little planning in the evening as to what's going to be on the breakfast table or what you're going to go to school with on drink on the way or mm-hmm. have on the way is certainly worth the time. And especially I would think for, you know, some kids are involved in extracurricular activities that they have to get to school earlier mm-hmm. or they stay later and their day is really long.
Right. Right. I think it's really important. And, you know, with some schools, I know it depends on the school with what their policies are, but I think it's really helpful if kids can bring snacks to school, if they can have things in their bag or in their locker so that if they have an activity or a practice or something after school, they can at least grab a granola bar and an apple or something that they've got available before an activity. And again, it wouldn't have to just be sports. Maybe they're staying after for theater or music or something like that. They still need some energy. They need to make sure mm-hmm. they're getting a snack in there to have that available. That's really, really helpful. So understanding how important it is, especially for kids, you know, up to fifth, sixth grade to have that morning snack if they can is really, really helpful because a lot of our schools here, like many places, start by 7:30. And so kids are often on the bus by 6:45 or so. And you think by 9 o'clock mm-hmm. or 9:30, mm-hmm. they need to eat. Almost every kid's going to need to eat by that time when they leave that early if they're not having lunch till 11:30 or 12.
Is there a prescribed snack time at school now?
Most are the schools that I'm familiar with the grade schools, do have a snack time. And so there are some, you know, some great programs. Some run through Extension and through other programs where there's programs where the food is actually brought in and some grants and things going on in some of our schools here where fresh fruit is brought in and there's programming. And that's been wonderful, too, that we've had some support in some of the districts to get some of that nutrition in.
Because we know that people are scraping by. A lot of folks are having a tough time making ends meet. And,
right.
you know, snacks can be, you know, that's another pressure on the budget.
Right. It's another cost. And anything we can do to try to help kids get that nourishment, I think, is really, really a benefit. And I know teachers know that because they know when they've got their kids and they've had their snack and now they can concentrate on something else. But if you've got hungry kids in your classroom, it's really hard, obviously, for them to concentrate. And I always think about it that it's really not fair, you know, for those kids that they've got to try to do everything without having a full stomach, and it's really difficult.
Yeah. This is Focus. Our guest this morning is registered dietitian Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move. Listeners, I look forward to your telephone calls, emails for Susan Kundrat. You can join us on the telephone with a call to either 333-9455 or toll-free 800-222-9455. Our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. That's W-I-L-L-talk@illinois.edu. And we've got a question by email here. Could you speak about carbohydrate and maintaining body fat? Also, more information about lunches for adults.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, a question about carbohydrate and maintaining body fat. I would say that, again, from the studies, there have been many studies that have been completed here at the U of I, as well as other places, looking at maintaining a better proportion of lean mass to body fat. And otherwise, we know that as we get older, our bodies tend to lose muscle mass and gain body fat. That's kind of the norm of what we do as we get older. So we look at ways to try to limit that or try to maintain your muscle mass as you get older as well. And of course, we know how important exercise is for that, and being active every day and doing some type of strength training a couple times a week. And those things are pretty well proven. From a nutrition standpoint, it appears that as we become just less active and our metabolism goes down as we get older, we really don't require as much carbohydrate in our diet as we do when we're younger. And so, unfortunately, the foods that tend to be the most available for all ages, including us adults, is high carbohydrate foods. I mean, those type of snack foods or chips or crackers, or especially what I see in a lot of these quick, I would say 100-calorie packs or individualized packs. Mm-hmm. It's almost all high carbohydrate food. And carbohydrate is good. We need carbohydrate. It helps give us brain energy and muscle energy and everything. We just may not need as much of it as we get older. Carbohydrate needs are really based on whether or not we're growing, whether or not we're active, how much exercise we're doing, all those kinds of things. So as we get older, and what I tend to do with clients is, you know, find that it's really beneficial to kind of switch that around a little bit. Not to say you want a high protein, you know, 60% protein diet or anything like that, or I'm not an advocate of anything like the very low carbohydrate diets out there. But I do think if we switch down and say, well, are you getting, the first question I would ask everybody, are you getting protein at every meal? And are you preferably getting two servings of protein, two different kinds? Or, for example, like we talked about the breakfasts and maybe
milk and peanut butter.
Milk and peanut butter, something like that. Same thing with lunch. Maybe for adults, you know, these little tortilla rolls are really great for kids. They're also great for adults because a small tortilla is not very many calories, or a small pita or small bagel, something like that. And making sure that you don't have just one or two slices of turkey if you eat turkey on it, but making sure you're getting a good 3 or 4 ounces, which ends up being maybe a half an inch worth of meat or beans or whatever you have on there, so that your protein is maybe a little bit more than you would normally have. So maybe instead of a big bagel, you go to a mini bagel and you have a little bit more protein on there. And then you add a fruit and a veggie. Well, that's probably a pretty good lunch, but it's upped in terms of the protein. The amount that seems to be, you know, researched, continued to be looked at closely, is this 30 gram at a time, 30 grams of protein at a time, 3, 4, 5 times a day. And for most people, that's more than they're going to eat early in the day. Now, most of us, if we have a chicken breast at night or a piece of fish or a burger or something, we're going to get 30 grams of protein in dinner. That's our evening mm-hmm. meal's not hard to get. But breakfast is a little bit harder because, again, if you don't have a couple different sources, then that becomes a little bit trickier. So that might be the first thing people might want to do when they're thinking of trying to, kind of watch body fat a little bit. Might shift your breakfast to a little bit higher protein. So a good example might be Greek yogurt as opposed to regular yogurt. Greek yogurt is almost double the protein of regular yogurt. So maybe if you have Greek yogurt and you have a little bit of nuts in that and some fruit, that's really filling, but that's probably 20, 25 grams of protein. So that's easier. Or you might have an egg scrambled with 3 extra whites, and that ends up being about 25 grams of protein. You have that and one slice of toast and fruit. So your carbohydrate's down a little, your protein's up, but you're still getting a good balance. And thinking about those kinds of ways to eat, I think, is really helpful as we're trying to maintain muscle and keep our body fat down. Protein, we know, is also very satisfying, so we tend to not eat as many calories when we're increasing our protein a little bit, as opposed to carbohydrate, because it digests very quickly and we get hungry again fast.
Okay, let's take another call. This is a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Yes, hello. I had a question here. I noticed that Ms. Kundro suggests yogurt a lot for snacks, and I noticed at the grocery store everybody's buying, you know, handfuls of yogurt. But if you look at it, almost all the yogurt has a tremendous amount of sugar added with it. I try to find just the plain yogurt, which is difficult to find. I want your comments. Do you really suggest people buy all of the fruit with yogurt? Because if you look at the content, there's a huge amount of sugar in there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it is low fat, but it's not low carbohydrate.
Right.
You know? So I don't know that it's a good suggestion to suggest people buy yogurt without being careful as which one they're picking up. That would be my comment anyway. I'm interested in your thought on that. I'll hang up and just listen.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call.
I think that's a really good point. I mean, yogurt itself is good. The best yogurt by far, and listener has a really good point, is to buy the plain yogurt that is unsweetened and add a little bit of sweetener yourself. I mean, if you added a teaspoon of honey or a teaspoon of a sweetener, that might be 20, 25, maybe 30 calories that you're adding, but generally that's sweet enough. Or if you have yogurt with fruit, then that sweetens it itself. But it is true that a lot of the regularly sweetened yogurts end up having a lot of extra sugar, what might equal more like 5 or 6 teaspoons of sugar added, or maybe more, to a yogurt. So your best bet is definitely to use plain or very lightly mm-hmm. sweetened. I've noticed that some of the thicker yogurts or some of the Greek yogurts that are out there are sweetened, but very little. There's a lot less. They might be a vanilla yogurt that has a little sweetener in it, but they taste almost like plain yogurt, but they have enough in there that they taste good. Another thing you can do with the plain yogurt is add a teeny bit of sweetener yourself and add a little vanilla to it. And that really makes it taste good.
Or go another route and put fresh herbs in it and use it as a dip for carrots or celery.
Perfect.
Or broccoli or whatever.
Exactly. That's good. And the listener's point brings up another idea for at least a milk product that would also be very high in carbohydrate or very high in protein, and that is cottage cheese or ricotta cheese. And so those are really good options too, because you can get the low-fat or non-fat versions, and they're actually higher in protein than the yogurts, and they would be a good option too. And I'm a big fan, if you do eat meat, of, again, just, you know, if you have a leftover chicken breast or something, just, you know, we don't normally think of that as breakfast, but that can give you a few slices of that, can give you some good protein. And just plain milk or soy milk, because that doesn't have to be sweetened. And for every ounce of milk you drink, that's a gram of protein. So if you drink a 10-ounce glass of milk along with your breakfast, that's 10 grams of protein. So that's another way to get that in without necessarily having it sweetened, because that is a good point. A lot of the yogurts are very sweet.
Let's take another call. This is a listener in Muhammad on line 2. Hello.
Yes, good morning. I have a kids' nutrition question for you. I have an 11-year-old son who just started running cross-country this year, and their practices are always like 5:30 in the evening, and so it's really disrupting our dinner hour, but I want to make sure that he's getting some good nutrition. What does he need to have? What are some good ideas for him to eat before he goes to practice and equally after he's done with practice that will benefit him when he's out there running at his cross-country practice?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's great that you're so concerned about what he's taking before and after, because that's a huge It's going to make a huge benefit to him with how he feels and how his energy is. Certainly before he runs, some of that's going to depend on what he can handle mm-hmm. on his stomach or on his GI tract. If he can handle something pretty easily, even something like a bowl of cereal and maybe a glass of juice, you want pretty quick carbohydrates right before you practice, because that's what's going to be used primarily before you run. And maybe even, you know, I have a lot of runners who can handle a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and a little juice box or something, if that's not too much on his stomach.
He's got a pretty rock hard stomach.
Okay. Well, that would be great. And if you could take it in, you know, if you have time to get that in an hour before he actually starts running, that's best if you can. And then extra fluids. So if he can take in some extra water or extra juice then and things, that would be great. And what we know about recovery is we do know there's this window of maybe 15, 20, 30 minutes that's best to get some recovery nutrition in. You've seen a lot of studies on chocolate milk, particularly for younger athletes. And we have some teams at the U of I. That's what we use. We use chocolate milk for recovery for some of them. Or there's some new drinks out that really mimic chocolate milk, but they're more in a recovery shake type format. And so if he likes something like chocolate milk, that would be fine. For most, you know, most athletes his age, probably if they could drink 12 or 16 ounces of chocolate milk, that'd be a good first recovery for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he could just eat a regular dinner after that.
Wow, he'll think that's great.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, again, it's some sugar. Some people will say, well, why would you recommend that? That's a lot of sugar. The body really wants quick sugar after a workout, because that's the fastest type of carbohydrate to get back into the muscle and get stored for the next day's workout. And then there certainly have been a lot of data to indicate that that getting in milk has whey protein, which is good. It has casein, which is good. And if someone doesn't like milk, soy milk works well too. I like the liquid refreshment like that after a workout because it gets digested faster. It gets into the stomach. And if you've got an athlete who can't handle milk or, you know, that bothers them or they don't want to drink milk, even something like juice is good. At least that's the quick carbohydrate.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the suggestions. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And let's take another call. This is a listener in Lafayette, Indiana. Line 4, hi.
Hi there. I know you and others speak favorably about bagels, and those are good on fat and sugar. But have you noted the sodium that comes in all of those?
Well, certainly a lot of those are high in sodium, and even a lot of the regular breads or regular pitas or tortillas or all those things are high in sodium. So the sodium definitely is an issue on a lot of those processed items, but some of the bagels are even higher than the breads. You're right about that.
Well, usually I found mostly they've got 400 and some units, which is as much as a can of soup.
Yeah, some of them are definitely high. If sodium is an issue, there's no question that the best grains or the best carbohydrate sources to use would be a grain that you would make yourself, whether that's rice or even a baked potato or the quinoa we talked about earlier, or some of those natural grains that you can make yourself and you don't have to add any sodium to them. Those really, and from a cost standpoint, are obviously the best because they're the least expensive. You can make plenty and doesn't cost a lot. And then you can flavor them however you want to. So if that's a possibility, that's probably the best option.
A great many breads come in the 200 range, which would sound more acceptable.
Right. And sodium is one of those things, particularly as adults, we really do want to watch that more. A lot of times for kids, it's still a good idea not to add a lot of salt, but it may not be as big of a problem for a lot of kids as it is for us as we get older and how our body doesn't manage it generally as well as we get older. But that's a really good point, is many of these processed items and processed grains as well as other foods do tend to have a lot of sodium added if they're not more of a natural brand.
You know, it seems as if once you get rid of one baddie, they put in two or three others.
Right. I mean, it's difficult sometimes to look at the labels and figure out exactly what all you're getting. I know a lot of the newer bread products and, again, some of these more thin-type toppers and things that are out there now have more fiber, they have more protein, but a lot of them have a little more sodium, too. And so sometimes that is one of the problems with some of them as they're more processed.
Could I ask, what fruits especially require peeling for safety against pesticides?
Well, I think it depends on, obviously something like apples we know is a fruit that if you can get organic, it's probably worth getting organic because...
It's part of a larger question about considering the prices of organic. What's really necessary?
Right. Well, I tell people that to take a look at their diet, to kind of take a look at what they eat a lot of. So, for example, if a family tends to eat a lot of apples and their kids eat a lot of apples, that may be something worth getting organic. Now, I kind of tracked it during the winter months with different apples and different organic versus non-organic, and there wasn't at some of the stores and some of the places where I shop, there wasn't a big difference. Now, it also depends on if it's in season or if it's not in season and those kinds of things. But I would say that's what you want to look at. What do you consume a lot of? And then those might be foods that if you eat a lot of them and they're high pesticide foods, they would be worth spending the extra money for.
Besides apples, what else comes to mind?
Well, the other things that come to mind... I don't know, Celeste, if you're funny.
I just went online and put in organic Dirty Dozen into the browser. And the most concern are with peaches, apples, sweet bell peppers, celery, nectarines, strawberries, cherries, pears, imported grapes, spinach, lettuce, and potatoes. And then the ones that you don't need to be so worried about, onions, avocado, frozen sweet corn, pineapple, mango, asparagus, frozen sweet peas, kiwi, bananas, cabbage, broccoli, and papaya.
So, well, that should take care of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to raise some of these issues. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call this afternoon. I've noticed that sometimes there's a big price difference, mm-hmm. and sometimes it's very small, mm-hmm. or sometimes there's none at all.
Right, right. It really does just depend on the food and on the product. And I guess I would tell people not to worry about buying everything organic, but really to take a look at what your level of consumption is as a family. And I think the other issue is when we're able to, you know, many of the farmers locally at your local farmers markets are certainly here in the big market in Urbana or other markets we have in Champaign. Some of our farmers or organic farmers, but many of them aren't fully organic, but they still don't use very much, you know, pesticide mm-hmm. in their growing, and it's local, so it's generally the nutrients are much higher because the food doesn't have to travel. So I would tell people too that even if they're not buying all organic, if you can buy more local, that's good too. And then whatever you buy, just make sure you are careful to wash it and everything. But we also know that there's a big benefit from eating produce. So sometimes people get afraid to eat it because they're really worried about the pesticides, and just know that there are also a lot of nutrients in the fruits and vegetables. And it's also okay to have canned or have frozen produce. And some people feel more, you know, comfortable maybe having something organic frozen or something. And if those are available to you, that's great too.
Yeah, and there are programs at various farmers markets. The market at the square now accepts mm-hmm. the link card.
Right.
And there are ways, there are some other programs where you can get I don't know how it works, but you can contact the organization or the community that runs your farmers market
mm-hmm.
and talk with them about what's available in terms of assistance.
Yes.
So, because that's been a complaint as well, that it
right.
can be a little more expensive at the farmers market. However, you get to a certain point in the year, and it seems like the prices fall back when there's the supply is huge.
Right.
So right now, probably last month, right now, the stalls are full.
Right, exactly. I always think about that with red peppers, because you think how expensive red peppers are generally
in
the stores.
Yeah, sometimes they're $1.50 a piece. It depends. Yeah.
Right, but when they're at the market, boy, that's one of the best deals you can ever get, because they're so good for you, and you can get a 2 for $1 or something like that, which is pretty darn good.
This is Focus. Our guest this morning, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, if you have a question or a comment about nutrition, about health, wellness, give us a call or join us by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. What do you recommend for adults when you get to a point in maybe it's like the middle of the afternoon and you kind of feel like you're mm-hmm. slowing down? A little milk, a little piece of cheese.
Yeah, I think something.
Whole grain crackers, something like that.
Right, something where you're mixing carbohydrate and protein. I mean, one of the ways that try to help prevent that is a lot of times by the afternoon we're really dehydrated. So we feel very low energy because we haven't consumed enough fluids during the day. So making sure that you don't have to be incredibly rigid, but a lot of times people drink a lot in the morning because maybe they're drinking extra tea or coffee or things in the morning they would normally drink. By about 11 or 12, they stop drinking very much fluid. By 1 o'clock, they haven't consumed much, and then they get very dehydrated in the afternoon. So some of that may be just a simple fact that you need to keep drinking more water, mm-hmm. have a bottle you can refill, have something that you can look at and see that you've consumed enough. That's helpful. And the other thing is to try to break down your lunch so that it's not so big. In other words, maybe you have your lunch, but that's just maybe that's a sandwich and a piece of fruit, but you save, like you say, maybe you save your cheese and another piece of fruit or something like that for the afternoon. So that snack's a little bit bigger, but your lunch is not quite so big.
Yeah, and I have to keep reminding myself to get up and take a walk.
Right, right.
That really helps.
To move around, too, is helpful. But I really think things like, you know, we've seen a lot of interest in almonds and pistachios and different types of nuts. And if you can eat nuts, that's really helpful because even a couple tablespoons of nuts, maybe you have that and an orange or something. It's not really that many calories, but it's a good mix of carbohydrate, fat, and protein. So thinking about quick proteins that you can add to a carbohydrate, maybe you do bring some crackers and cheese, or you have nuts and dried fruit, or that's where you have a something like a yogurt, but maybe a plain yogurt so it's not so much sugar, and maybe you throw a few nuts in that. That would be great. Or maybe you keep a little bit, you eat half your sandwich with fruit at lunch and you have the other half a sandwich. A half a sandwich is always a great mix of carbohydrate and protein. So any way you can kind of break down that lunch if you're able to in your day and not eat so much early is really helpful in terms of overall energy for the afternoon.
Okay. Let's take another call. This is a listener in Savoy on line one. Hi.
Hi. I wonder if you'd be willing to address people who have the opposite problem, which is how to eat healthily when you're underweight. I had a problem all through my young years, and except during my pregnancies, and now in my older age, I seem to be going back to having my weight just slipping, slipping, slipping. Everything I eat is healthful, but it's not full of the calories that would keep weight on me. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, what do you suggest?
Right. And what you're talking about, you're not the only one who has to worry about that, because for a lot of people, that's a big concern. And the first thing I look at is make sure you're getting enough fat in your diet. Fat has the most calories. Fat's more than double the calories of carbohydrate and protein. And that would be things like, even if you've got high cholesterol, you can certainly add nuts, because nuts, if anything,
have high cholesterol.
Okay. Yeah, because nuts, as long as they're a nut that's high in monounsaturated fat, like walnuts, or almonds or pistachios or something like that, sunflower seeds, those actually are generally helpful with lipids. They actually may help decrease bad cholesterol, and so that's helpful. So even just starting to add more nuts and seeds, if you do that two or three times during the day, we know that's probably good for your lipids. And again, you have to watch the sodium. You might need to buy the unsalted varieties, but that can be a lot of calories in a small amount. A handful of nuts can be 100 or 200 calories at a time. So that's one thing that's very helpful.
Okay, what about pecans?
Pecans are good, too. They have a little bit more saturated fat than some of the others, but they also have good fat. And so pecans would be a good choice as well. Soy nuts or dried soybeans, things like that. And again, making sure maybe that you're getting some additional foods that have a little bit more protein in them as well, because that helps maintain muscle mass. So I would make sure that when you're eating, you're not just eating a grain or something just with carbohydrate, but you're adding in maybe a glass of skim milk, or you're adding in some lean turkey or something like that that's still not going to be a problem with your cholesterol.
I drink a lot of skim milk, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't seem to consume enough calories to keep from burning off fat that I actually need.
Well, another food that might be helpful for you is, if you like it, is avocado, because an avocado is really dense in calories. It has a lot of calories because it has a lot of fat.
Okay.
But it's monounsaturated fat. So, again, it's really, really good for you.
Okay. Can you make a sandwich out of that by putting mayonnaise in there, maybe a low-fat mayonnaise?
Sure.
And nuts and make a sandwich?
Yeah, you could definitely make a sandwich of that, or even low-fat cheese and avocado and some lettuce or something is really good, and tomato.
Tomato.
Yeah, add that on there, and that's a great sandwich. Or even just mashing up an avocado and spreading that on a sandwich. That's great, because that's good fat for you.
Okay, well, those are some good suggestions. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. That's great on a sandwich, an avocado.
It sure is.
I got to watch it, but it's a good treat.
Yeah,
for me,
is.
It's a good treat.
Yeah.
Let's take another call. This is a listener in Champaign, line two. Hi.
Hi. Is that me?
Yep, that's you.
I listen to your programs with great interest, but you've never touched on a problem that I have with the high calorie intake, getting it up there. I can't eat nuts or grains. I have to be very careful with seeds, and I'd like to have some suggestions to how to put on weight without getting into these things that I have been told I must not eat.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in your case it would be very helpful to work one-on-one with a dietitian, so you could kind of list out everything that you can eat and everything that you can't eat, and then be able
to... Basically, I can't eat nuts.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you can't eat nuts, then that does open, you know, windows to even things like more olive oil, more, certainly we talked about the avocado, which is a great thing to add because it is so caloric, you know, you could certainly make sure that what you're getting in some of the grains that you can eat, maybe that are the higher calorie ones, or even things like more potatoes, more sweet potatoes, more starches. For a lot of people, they really have to watch that because that's a lot of calories, But for you, that might be fine. Roasted vegetables as opposed to plain vegetables, because you can mix them with olive oil and just roast them in the oven. That adds a lot of calories, adds a lot of flavor. And for you, it'd be fine because, again, you could be adding those fats in that we know are good fats, but they really can add a lot of calories quickly. So in your case, I'd say, yeah, be liberal with some of the oil and vinegar dressings or Italian dressings or things that are good for you. Be liberal with adding more olive oil to things. And
so there isn't much you can do about not eating nuts other than the nut butters.
Right. The nut butters, if you can handle those, are great in terms of protein and fat and calories, and maybe different types of nut butters. I've had clients where they can handle almond butter fine, even if peanut butter bothers them. So maybe looking at different options.
Yeah, well, it's just bothered me as I've listened to these wonderful programs that this problem for some of us is never mentioned.
Well, thanks for mentioning.
Yeah, thank you, because it is something I certainly deal with clients. So we could even, you know, have a show on maybe how to gain weight. I mean, that would be something that would be good.
Okay, maybe that's what we'll do next time.
Sure.
Okay, so we will wrap it up for this month, the month of September. And Susan has a handout that we'll be happy to send to folks who send us a self-addressed stamped envelope to Focus, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801, and I think we also might post it online. And our web address is will.illinois.edu.